Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to the Believe in Temple Football Podcast. I'm John DiCarlo, the editor of OwlScoop.com, joined as always by Adam Michael, former Temple assistant, former Temple quarterback, now leading the Michael Brothers performance, training people, training future football players out in the Pittsburgh area. What's up, bud?
Hey, John, my man. Everything is good, guys. Listeners, how's it going? Just as you know, man, I got my two youngins getting ready for Halloween. Had a couple of little events we went to this past week, and now we're getting ready for a few other events this weekend. You know, we'll go trick-or-treating at my parents' house, then we'll go do some trick-or-treating at our house on Monday, and a couple different things planned, which is pretty cool. But, you know, I do miss Halloween, strangely enough, like in Philly, coming back, you know what I mean, from either a game or from the film sessions and just walking up, you know what I mean, Cecil B or Burks or whoever the heck it was, and then you see in all the normal everyday students dressed in, you know, Halloween costumes, and I'm over there just like, man, I wonder what it's like to be a normal everyday student. They're probably thinking the same thing, like, wow, I wonder what it's like to be a football player. Maybe not at my time because we were so bad, but it's pretty cool, man. I do like Halloween, so I'm anxious for my boys. They're a little more excited than they have been in the past, you know, as they're getting older. So
what are they dressing up as?
I don't know. I think we have like 11 costumes. No, one's going to be Grayson, the older one, is going to be Iron Man. And Avery's going to be, who the heck's Avery going to be? Oh, Avery's going to be Hulk. Mm-hmm. And then tomorrow we're going to go to a football game, my nephew's football game. They're going to dress up as two quarterbacks. So one will be Kenny Pickett. And then the other one will be Joe Burrow. And then, so we'll be at the football game dressed as that. Like, I think every year, at least the last 2 years, I've gotten them like quarterback jerseys. So like 2 years ago, I got them there for Halloween. Kyler Murray, and my brother bought them a Justin Herbert jersey. So, I mean, next year we'll see, man. Maybe I'll jump the Hurts bandwagon if these teams playing well. Mm-hmm. And then like, you know, Mahomes, I've had a Mahomes in the cart, John, probably like every single time I bought the other guys. The colors just don't do it for me. That red and gold, or it's not like the 49ers color red, you know what I mean, or in yellow or whatever the heck they're doing, but it just doesn't do it for me. So I'd have to get a white one. Mm-hmm. But you know, with kids, how dirty that thing will get so fast. Oh, yeah. I just can't do it. So you we'll remember, see how everything goes.
You remember favorite Halloween costume growing up?
Ah, that'd be a good question to ask our fans too, see what they come up with. I was probably a regular ninja, probably like 6 years in a row. You know, we didn't really you know, I was a homemade Ninja Turtle. Leonardo is my favorite turtle. I was a turtle a couple of times. I was Alfalfa.
Just took your hair and like put the
I was so I think I was like Bill Clinton or George Bush. I had like a mask. I don't think it was my brothers. I just wore like a old suit back when I was in like third grade. But now I just walk around with a Jason mask. Mm-hmm. And then that's about it, man. How about you? Anything good?
I think one year my dad was a big he was a big like Kenny Stabler and Oakland Raiders fan. I think one year before I really knew who he was, I wore an Oakland Raiders Fred Biletnikoff jersey, and I was an Oakland Raider one year.
Nice.
God, I think when I was a kid, you had like those little plastic costumes that you would literally just put on the front of you.
Yeah.
The mask. I think I was Superman one year. Mork from Mork and Mindy one year.
Wow.
Later on, like when you actually like you're in college, post college, you go out for Halloween parties. I think I was a nerd one year. Like, I don't know.
It's cool, man. It's always interesting to see.
Yeah.
It's always interesting to see. I've tried to get the whole, and also I tried to get a PJ Walker jersey for my boys, but I can't find the youth version. Like, I've reached out to a couple people down there because I wanted a LaMelo Ball jersey for my boys. Because he's just exciting.
Yeah,
and no one reached back, but I don't think they have the PJ youth jerseys yet. So hopefully,
you gotta hook you up with one. Starting,
yeah, you get something. No, I think you can create your own for a couple more bucks. But I guess I hit the cheap route.
Carolina, we'll see what happens. Starting quarterback PJ Walker.
Yeah, man. Obviously everyone's excited. So we'll see. Just hopefully it puts in, you know, back to back weeks in the team. I'm sure their energy is pretty good right now, and it's cool to see. But you know, he knows that. He got a lot of work ahead of him, so it'll be interesting to see how it goes this week. I'm glad they play at one. You know, I'll get a chance to be able to watch a little bit of it.
Yeah. As always, the Believe in Temple Football podcast is brought to you by Bet Online. Basketball's back, and Bet Online remains your number one source for all your sports betting needs this season. You'll always find the latest odds, team matchup info, player news, and game trends at Bet Online. And as your continued source for all sports wagering information, BetOnline features live betting, free contests, and giveaways all season long. Always the fastest and easiest way to bet all your favorite sports and events, whether that's the NFL, the NBA, the NHL, MMA, tennis, boxing, or even golf. So head to betonline.ag to join and receive your 50% welcome bonus with your first deposit. Make sure to use the promo code BELIEVE, that's BLEAV in all caps, to receive your rewards. Bet Online, where the game starts. So Adam, we got a Temple loss against Tulsa to recap. We got the Navy midshipmen to preview. We got a ton of mailbag questions this week, which is cool. So I thought this was a winnable game against Tulsa, and it looked that way at first. They jumped out to a 10-0 lead behind your buddy Leighton Jordan's pick six and Camden Price's field goal. But giving up 299 yards on the ground was really the story for him. Deneric Prince scored an 84-yard touchdown run. That one put the game out of reach, and he wasn't even touched up the gut. More stuff on the offensive line, more injuries. Adam Klein left the game in the second half. James Famine left. Adonicus Sanders came out in the second half wearing sweatpants. We actually got Everett Withers this week instead of Stan Drayton in the Monday press conference. And Everett came out with some injury updates. He said that Ian Stewart's still out with a foot injury. Don't know whether they'll have Adam Klein and James Famine this week. And if they don't, of course, that's tough. You know, I know that Chris Wiesenham wants Adam at center and likes what he's seen from James so far. And we'll talk a little bit later in the pod about Victor Stoffel, right tackle. He's played two games there. Ahmad Anderson played better, but the passing offense was clearly off. And, you know, Zay Baines was targeted 10 times in that game. He and EJ didn't connect once. And, you know, again, the game was there to be won. But, Adam, you've been through this, you know, losing teams, rebuilding teams. They're going to just step in some stuff along the way. And if it's not one thing, it's another thing. And no matter how many holes you try to plug, if you're just not where you need to be yet in terms of talent, the depth, it's stuff that kind of gets you. So what did you take away from the game? I got some questions for you here, but what general takeaways from it?
Well, you love to start the game out, you know, up 10-0, you know, obviously you hope that the players' confidence is, you know, skyrocketing. You hope that they see like, hey, listen, guys, you know, we're playing at a high level. This is what we need to do. This is, you know, these are the things we need to stop. I was that running back from Tulsa. I mean, he looks like a professional running back.
He does look good.
Like, physically, like a tad bit like Bernard Pierce-ish. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? The dude just looked big. And, you know, guys were tackling him or trying to tackle him and just – you know, I'm not bouncing off, but like it was, you know, even on the fumble, you know what I mean? Like five or six guys were, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. He was carrying them, and I mean, his legs weren't like dead legs. They were just, you know, he just kept running.
Yeah. I think he had been hurt. I think he'd been hurt earlier in the year, and then he came back and he's given them a boost.
Yeah, you wish that, you know, EJ probably threw a little more than he had to, or that you wished. The completion percentage is, you know, low. As you heard, a couple of the announcers saying the same thing. It just, you know, the accuracy was a tad off. Mm-hmm. And whether that's, I mean, as you just mentioned, you know, having someone, we'll talk about Zay here in a little bit. Well, you know what I mean? But, you know, it's like you said, you had it. And then what happened during that, you know, those parts of the games that, you know, kind of lost it. You know what I mean? Like, that's what, as a staff, they have to figure out and try to explain to the players, like, hey, listen, guys, it's up 10-0. This is where you have to, you know, and you know, one way or another, step on their throats and, you know, get up 17, get up 24-3 at halftime, whatever the case may be. And they just didn't get it done. And I mean, like you mentioned, you give up 300 yards to these guys. Now you're playing a Navy team that runs 60 times a game, you know what I mean? Most in the conference. And I think it might even probably be first in the country. So it's not going to change. And this is a little different style, as you know. You know, we obviously played them. You guys have talked about it a bunch. So it'll be interesting to see how they attack these guys from a defensive standpoint, and then offensively, how, you know, how important each drive truly is.
Now, EJ, you know, typically just gives the right answers when he talks about, you know, playing behind an offensive line that's changed every week. But what do you think's going through his mind as he tries to compensate for all these changes?
Yeah, I mean, that's a good question. And being a young guy, a lot of things could go through your head, and you could probably say something stupid. You could actually, you know, something could come out and people can misconstrue it and take it one way or another. But like, it's almost like we are trained. But for him, it's like, it's ingrained in his mind that no matter what, like, we can't call out coaches. We can't call out players. We can't call out position groups. We don't call out staff. Like, you just saw Aaron Rodgers basically call out his entire team. And I know Aaron Rodgers is a Hall of Famer and, you know, a top whatever quarterback you want to rank him in. And he's playing for a ton of money and, you know, has won at the highest level. So, you know, those guys are a little different. But and like I mentioned before, I think once the game starts, he doesn't even realize who's out there with him, in my opinion. Now, there's just too many checklists in his head when he goes out there to say to himself, oh, no, I don't have my starting center. Now I'm going to worry and panic and try to get the ball a little faster or a little quicker. So you're hoping that that's not the case. And he's just kind of locked in and just worrying about, hey, listen, these are the guys I'm out with. This is who I'm trusting to do their job. And, you know, going about it that way is what I'm hoping.
And I want to ask you about a guy like Zay Baines. You know, you have been around him, been around a lot of these players, targeted 10 times in that game. They don't connect once. Again, it might sound like a simple question, but what's going wrong when you have a guy targeted that many times? I mean, a couple of them were drops, but it could have been a little bit of everything, but what goes wrong there where he's targeted that many times and they just don't connect?
I would venture to say that Zay and the staff didn't think that he'd have to play as much as he did.
Yeah.
I think that's first and foremost.
Correct.
You know what I mean? Like, it's like anybody, you know, the Steelers have Calvin Austin. They're not playing him. You know, he's going to be in the IR the rest of the year because they already have their three wide receivers set.
Right.
So, you know, I mean, if you have to get in the 10 personnel, are you going to do it? Or are you going to play, you know, a tight end or whatever you're going to do? You know what I mean? So, I think, you know, when I would watch Zay whenever I was at Temple and he'd be down there with the scout team, because obviously he wasn't, you know, ready yet physically, mentally, but he would just continuously make plays and go up and get it. You know, he probably has some of the best, I would say, ball skills, like going up and making miraculous catches or spectacular catches. And I'm sure, like I said, if he's the fourth guy, he had to have shown something in practice, you know, because we've gone through a couple of guys. You know, Malik Cooper played early in the season. He hasn't played, the position, you know, recently, if you know Fox, and you know what I mean, a couple of guys are banged up or whatnot, but to be put in a situation like that, he has to be the fourth guy. Now, I think, you know, this week, if he still is number four, if he moved up to three, the reps will help. You know, PJ just talked about the same thing. He's like, usually in practice, I get 4 or 5 reps. Mm-hmm. And now you're talking, you're getting 60, 65 reps. And
yeah,
I would imagine they're going to run Zay into the ground if he is the fourth guy or the third guy now and continue, because you need reps. I mean, really what it comes down to, you know, EJ needs reps. It's just how it is. The new offensive line, those guys, the young offensive line, they need reps. And, you know, we would do this all the time, you know, when Ventel was around and, you know, those guys, like, all right, Wednesday gets around, it's after third down, we get some base offense. All right, let's put some of these young guys in, let them run around, let the other guys get their legs back underneath them. And that's where you kind of gain that, all those reps and, you know, that knowledge before you have to get out there when the lights come on.
So let's look at this Navy team. They're 2-5 overall. They've got I mean, they beat ECU in two overtimes back on September 24th, and ECU has since responded with a big win, and they look better than people expect them to be. Yeah. Then they routed Tulsa 53-21, again, a team that Temple just lost to. Now, since that Tulsa win, they're coming off two straight losses to SMU, 40-34, and then Houston last week, 38-20. So they gave up five touchdown passes to Clayton Tune. He's a good quarterback. He's ahead of where EJ Warner is, certainly. But it does show you how Temple was maybe likely going to have to win that game Saturday, even though they'll want to try to run it to take some pressure off EJ. I think there's one thing to note here that could be important for Temple, and it's especially important when you're playing Navy. They're getting outscored 61-17 in the first quarter of the season. So there's an opportunity for Temple to start fast. Again, they have to do that if they want to win Saturday. If they fall behind, you know, this cliche has probably been said 50 million times. If you fall behind to Navy or any of the service academies by two scores, it's like death because they just run.
It is. You're 100% right. And that clock just keeps going and going and going and going.
Yeah. And this isn't even, you know, we're talking about this on our Al Scoop podcast. This isn't the best Navy team we've seen in quite a while, but you know, they do what they do. Dava Fofana is their leading rusher at fullback, and he's got the most carries of any back on the team. He's got 425 yards and four touchdowns. They have a quarterback this year in Ty Lavatai who he leads them with five rushing touchdowns, and he's throwing the ball a little bit more than your traditional Navy quarterback. He threw it even more than he did last year. So far, he's got 785 yards and five touchdowns. He's already thrown it, I think, close to 30 more times than he did all last season. So in some ways, they look exactly the same in terms of just what they do at the quarterback position. They look a little different. So, I mean, Adam, you've been around it. You've been part of staffs that had to prepare, not necessarily on the defensive side, but in the building, you know, what the coaches talk about. And again, like this, you know, Army, Navy, they do what they do. They don't change much of it. It's just like, here's what we're going to do. You just need to stop it. What is it like to prepare for the triple option? Coaches get asked this every year, but it's still a chore, whether you're facing like an undefeated Navy team, an undefeated Army team, or a 500 team or sub 500 team. These are just tricky games.
It's tough. It really is. And that's probably a simple answer, but you know, if I was a betting man, which I am now, I can do now that I'm no longer a football coach. So I'll do a little, a couple of things on FanDuel and whatnot, and a couple of fantasy leagues, as we talked about before. But if I was a betting man, I would think that coach and his staff did some form of Navy game plan during the spring or into fall camp. Now, I'm not talking about a full all-out Navy week, but they game planned for it. They did a couple periods during practices, and then they did some stuff before or after practice, maybe some live stuff with some scouts at one point or another. Now, it's not only the defense, John, that has to be on top of things and filling gaps and, you know, preparing for the cut blocks. But the scout team are the guys that have to really be on top of their game. You know, they have to watch a ton of film. The GA spend a ton of time trying to get them right and have them do everything as close to Navy as you can. I'm talking about watching game tape, like ESPN clips, and hearing their cadence.
Yeah.
And what does the exact sound like? When do they send the motion? Is it by hand? Is it by foot? You know, how, you know, those things all matter, you know. And then then you're talking about guys like, you know, we'll talk in a little bit. I remember, you know, the Matt Ioannidis's, and then you remember, like, you know, Archibong and Jacob Martin, who are just big and they just disruptive guys and different positions or whatnot. But nobody likes to be cut. Nobody likes to have somebody diving at their legs. I mean, that's their future.
Yep.
You know what I mean? That's their livelihood. You know, Leighton Jordan is a guy that wants to play at the next level. You know, we're going to talk about him and Darian, you know what I mean, who specialize in rushing the quarterback. How do they handle these situations? It's like, hey, listen, it's going to be different. You know what I mean? It really is. And you're hoping that, you know what I mean, the DC DJ is going to have to – I don't know how he handled teams like this in his past. In his past, has he ever gone up against defenses like this or what's his plan? But I do know, and I'm going to bring back former coaches, but like Phil Snow and Jeff Collins and Thacker and those guys, they knew how to disrupt these guys. And, you know, if we go back and look at the stats, like it's telling, you know, we won those games. We've been pretty successful against Navy and armies of the world. And then I remember Jeff Collins ran two defenses versus Navy, literally two. It was like sky and ground or red and blue. And that's all he ran. So it's like, do you make it simplistic? Do you still do things, you know, you change your personnel? Like, you know, is Avandi Rigby going to play every snap now? Are you going to put in a couple more safeties? Because, you know, I mean, there's some big boys. You know, they're going to be cut down. There's going to be some more outside run. How are you going to handle all the different gaps? John, I'm a little long-winded here. That's just defense.
Yeah.
Offensively, like, just imagine. I just told you, like, they average their time of possession is 35 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Temple's not going to have the football that many nope. times. Temple's, you no. know, I would always do a stat. You'll have like six drives or something along those lines, and mm-hmm. go ahead and go three and out. I remember when I played, we didn't get the ball back. We had one drive in the first quarter. Just imagine that. You don't get the ball back until the second quarter. You're sitting on the sideline, and you're doing the whole little, it's third down. Mm-hmm. It's third and three.
Mm-hmm.
They don't get it, and you're like, yeah, punt. And they're going for it on fourth and one. And they yep. just get it. Just do a little fullback yep. dive.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, every snap matters. Every play matters. First down is a big down. Have to stay on the field on third down. Now, that's the stressful part. Like, we could put a mm-hmm. lot of stress on that. Or do you just, you know, let it fly a little bit? You know, I remember we should have beat Navy back in 2008.
Mm-hmm.
Or was it? Yeah, 2008, I think it was. And we were up 28-3 at halftime that game. Remember, and they, you know, they ended up coming back. Yeah. And we'll talk about that. Someone asked a question about that. But
yeah,
we went up big time on them, and, you know, I ended up coming back by throwing the ball. So
mm-hmm.
hey, you'll be ready for, you know, they'll scheme it up, and they'll have some trick plays with some wheel routes and some backs out the back, filling up the seam. But it's difficult, and, like, it's live. Like, those guys are going to be tackling the scout guys live this week.
Yeah.
And that's interesting. Again, I don't know what they're doing or if, you know, they're banged up. But we'll see what happens, John. It's going to be interesting to see how the defense handles that type of offense.
Now, guys like Leighton and Darian Varner are the latest, you know, Temple pass rushers or pass rushers on any team who now have to, in some ways, adjust what they do. I'm not saying that – I mean, we've seen – Leighton can drop back into cover. He's got two pick sixes this year. Darian Varner has been, I think, pretty solid. Well, not that they were solid at stopping the run last week, but I don't want to call these guys one-dimensional guys, but they do what they do well. They both have 6.5 sacks. They've had really good seasons in that respect. Now, again, as cliche as it sounds, you can't just pin your ears back, and it's not like you're going, you're rushing the quarterback every time. What does this mean for guys like that? We hear it all the time. It's like, you have to be disciplined. You have to be gap sound, read your keys, read your assignments. We know that there's not much more you can say about it, but how does this change things for guys like this? Is it kind of frustrating for a defensive end to say, okay, man, I gotta, now I'm reacting more instead of just pouncing?
Yeah. 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 I mean, I can only imagine being like a Hassan Reddick and, mm-hmm. you know, Jacob Martin, or, you know, we've had guys, I mean, you can just keep going through the pass rushes that we had at Temple playing against these guys. And it's like, hey, listen, every time you play, you're playing Houston or SMU and you're throwing the ball 50 times a game, do you think them big boys, do you think Freddie Booth Lloyd was really excited about, you know, two gapping the A gap, or, you know what I mean, because they're throwing the ball so much? Or do you want to, you know what I mean, you have a chance to rush the quarterback 50 times in a game plan against those guys most of the time. Now you have those one opportunity to go ahead and, you know what I mean, do your job. It's really what it comes down to when you're playing a team like this. I mean, mm-hmm. Darian's going to have to, you know, he's not going to be able to get blown off the football. Those guys play with such elite leverage, and just, you know what I mean, how low they come off the football is just astounding. When you're watching it live, you're like, how do they do this? You know what I mean? Just the yep. angles they take.
Mm-hmm.
And they're just, you know, hip to hip and just pushing guys around. I remember seeing guys just blown back 10, 12 yards. I'm like, holy cow.
Almost like they're playing rugby.
Yeah, and it's just like, and those guys aren't big guys. You know what I mean?
Right.
It's like me and you playing guards for Navy and just pushing these dudes around. But they do such a good job, and they're so sound. You know, they don't commit penalties, least penalized team in the league, mm-hmm. probably for the last 10 years. But those guys are going to have to do their job. They're going to be out there, and it's sooner or later, these guys are going to throw the football, and they're going to have to be prepared to go after the quarterback. So, again, man, they're just going to have to do their job until that time comes.
Is that also tough, too? I mean, like, obviously, if Temple's up two scores and then you get Lavatai dropping back a little bit more, you'd rather have that. Again, he's not bad throwing the ball. You can't just say, oh, he's a typical service academy quarterback. He doesn't have the arm. You know, again, his completion percentage isn't great, but he can hurt you, so they have to be careful of him. But that's the ideal thing, right? You know, you get up by a couple of scores. And I'm not saying they're going to completely abandon what they do and stop the run, but is that what you have to hope for, that you just really get them out of, like, okay, we can't just go fullback dive on first down pitch on second down. Like, now they have to mix in more passing. That's what you want to get to them, right?
Yeah, you'd love to for that to be the case. And like I mentioned before, back in 08, we put them in that situation. And guess what? Mm-hmm. They just torched us. I mean, they were just throwing the ball up and down the field. And I just couldn't believe my eyes. Like, it's one of the like, if I could go back and change anything, it would be that game right there, because, you know, we'd have been bowl eligible. But enough talking about me. But you'd hope that, hey, listen, guys, we're going to get up, and we're going to get up in the second half at least. You know, first half, those guys are just going to play their game, I feel, until, you know what I mean, maybe coach is like, hey, listen, it's time to, you know, we got to throw the ball, move down, a little bit further down the field. But he's only going to throw the ball, what, I don't know, 14 times a game, 15 times a game, and he's only completing half of those balls. But, you know, he's already thrown for 5 touchdowns. He's thrown for, you know, three in the last 2 games. So you hope that you can, you know, get pin years back and go get the quarterback a little earlier than you'd hope. But we'll see what happens.
I'm looking at Adam. I'm looking at that box score because you had me thinking, yeah, it was 33-27 in overtime. You hit Maneri on a 4-yard touchdown pass. Bruce Francis on 2 49-yard touchdown passes. The late, great Kier Griffin, 16-yard touchdown run. Yeah, and then they came back with – they scored the last – oh, they had that – I remember that. Clint Soviet, 42-yard fumble return. And then Ricky Dobbs scored in overtime. I remember that game.
Yeah, man, that was a tough pill to swallow.
Mm-hmm.
I remember we were driving. I think I fumbled on the quarterback draw on, like, the 4-yard mm-hmm. line. And then, obviously, Kier – we were trying to stop the – we were trying to run the clock out. And instead of taking a knee, Golden decided to run it.
That was it. That was it.
Guys held him up. He fumbled, and, like, my most least athletic play in the history of my career. I went to tackle the guy, and I, like, just tripped over an imaginary yard line. I fell right on my face. Like, first time I ever fell on my face, like, my face mask. Mm-hmm. Like, I didn't stop myself. I just, like, felt like someone pushed me, like a ghost or something. I just, like, was holding me down. I couldn't make the tackle, and we went into overtime. We'll talk a little bit, you know, something someone asked about a play that I wish I could have back for one of our mailbag questions. So,
well, that was a play call that I mean, Al took a lot of heat for that, you know, deciding to run it.
Right.
But that's what stood out from that game. You had good numbers in that game, dude. 21 of 28, 304 yards, 3 touchdowns, no picks.
Yeah, we played good ball, man. We were up early and we were up often. I remember we did – it was like 4th and 1 and Rule called like a fake quarterback sneak where I was like – I you know, pushed into the line and then I slipped back and I threw the – you know what I mean? The corners all crashed in and Bruce just ran right by him and scored. But that's one game I wish we could have back. Because, you know, we would have been bowl eligible. That should have been the first year we were bowl eligible.
Yeah.
That's the same year we lost on the Hail Mary and – lost 7-3 to Central Michigan. I can go on and on, man.
Yeah.
We could have a whole different podcast about the 2008 Temple football season.
Now, defensively, they're not bad. I mean, they play 3-4 front. Yeah, again, for what it's worth, they have the top ranked rushing defense in the conference. They haven't been good at defending teams through the air, but they've only allowed 5 rushing touchdowns, a little more than 100 yards a game. They have that striker position, like that linebacker safety hybrid. John Marshall is their league tackler there, and he's got 3 sacks. They have a guy in Jacob Busick who has 5 sacks for them at defensive end. And so they're not – I mean, again, I wouldn't say they have an elite defense by any means, but they defend the run well, which isn't great for Temple. And how would you – you know, before we get into the mailbag here, and we got to want to talk a little bit about Victor Stoffel and what he's done in the last couple of weeks. I've got some audio from him. If you're Temple's offensive coordinator, how do you go about playing these guys? I mean, looking at what teams are doing in the first quarter, I mean, is the temptation there? Like, again, you don't, I feel like on one hand you're thinking if we try to pass and we go 3 and out super quickly, that can be bad because if they get the ball back, they might keep it if you can't stop them on 3rd and 4th down, obviously. But is the temptation there to say, hey, we're going to be like an NFL team. We got to throw it now to get up and run it later, given what they do and what they don't do well? Would the temptation be there to be like, all right, we got to get EJ into a groove early on?
I think that to me, being a former quarterback and quarterback coach and offensive-minded guy, I think you always have to find ways to get your quarterback in a groove. And I'm not saying to, you know, change your entire offense to cater to what you need from him, but if he doesn't play well, and the offense isn't going to play well, and that's what's most important. And you obviously you talked about how well they play against the rush. I remember playing Navy and coaching against them. And they just played so hard, you know what I mean. And there were, I think one time that they didn't was when we beat them at their place for the championship game.
Yeah.
And I remember Coach, I can never say his last name, but it was phenomenal.
Andy Montalillo.
Yeah. Thank you. And he just said, Temple, we made them quit, essentially, is what he said.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm kind of paraphrasing, but that was the only time I've ever seen them not play hard and, not mm-hmm. be physical. Like, these guys aren't bigger than us. They're not more athletic than us. They're not faster than us. Now, they have a couple guys that can play, don't get me wrong. But you would take probably 80% of our roster over their roster on any given day.
Mm-hmm.
Now, why are they good? Obviously, the style of offense that they run, the type of defense that they run, how tough they are, mm-hmm. how physical they are, how dedicated they are, how, how smart they play. So it'll be an interesting game. I hope that the OC doesn't play it too safe and worry too much about what I talked about earlier about, hey, having too many three and outs. It's like, hey, listen, how are we successful? What can we do to be successful? There's going to have to be a trick play or two in there. They're going to have to get things rolling, but you'd love to be able to run the football. Obviously, we say that every week.
Mm-hmm.
But it'll be interesting to see what style he goes with, to play slow and, hey, live the third and nine. Throw a screen and see what happens.
Yeah.
You have to do well on first down, and we have to convert on third down, or we're not going to win many football games anyway.
Yeah. Going back to the offensive line for a second again, seven games, seven different starting combinations. I don't know if they'll have Adam Klein back this week. They talked about Adam, I think, had like an MRI. Everett talked about an MRI for Adam. So I'm walking out of the building on Monday. But we'll see. We'll see if he plays. We'll see if James Famenu plays. Again, I think he could give them, he has tackle size but could play inside. I don't know if they're going to have either one of those guys on Saturday. The guy that they have had over the last couple of weeks is finally healthy for them is Victor Stoffel. And 6'8", 300 pounds, he has that length that you'd like at either tackle position. And again, I'm not watching film like the coaches are, but even just in the basic eye test, it looks like he's on most occasions getting the job done in pass protection. Again, I think the whole line needs to play better in terms of running the ball. I think we've talked about this before too. It's probably a chicken and egg thing. What is it? Is the line not holding blocks? Is it the backs not hitting them? But nonetheless, I think he's a piece for them, a guy that they can potentially build around, a guy that came here and out of Sweden and hadn't played offensive line before. And I had a chance to talk to him, after Monday's practice. And you guys, by the time you hear this podcast, you can listen to the full interview. Tomorrow we'll have it up on Al Scoop, but had a chance to talk to Victor about just his development, what it's like for him to be back out there, and just the flexibility that he could give that line if they can find him as that solution at right tackle. And here's part of that interview with Victor Stoffel.
How good does it feel just get back on the field playing?
No, it feels really good. I mean, it's my first time actually starting, so yeah. I'm pretty excited about that. I'm feeling good out there.
How long were you, when did you first get injured? Like, what was your injury? How long were you banged up?
I mean, so I had knee issues for a while, like okay. My entire college career. But then during fall camp there, halfway through fall camp, I injured my knee like more severely. Mm-hmm. So ever since then, I've kind of been trying to work on it even more.
When it happened, did you think it was something that's going to cost you the season, or did you kind of have to just take it day by day, week by week?
No, I think it took it day by day. I didn't think I was going to miss any games, really. I was still thinking I was going to play. I mean, I still finished out fall camp.
Right.
I was just thinking that my knee's gotten like aggravated. Mm-hmm. That's what I was thinking initially. But they told me I'd miss some games. But I mean, the plan was always to be back for the season. So I'm just happy to be back.
When did you feel like you were getting ready? I mean, were they being super cautious with everything? What was it like in those days when you were ramping up to getting to play a couple weeks ago?
No, they're definitely being cautious. They're like slowly kind of putting me back out there, which at times can kind of frustrating. Like I'm trying to get out there faster, but they're holding me back a little bit. But they know best. So just kind of do what they say. And then just even though it kind of sucks to like get minimal reps, you kind of want more, but they know you should. Even if your knee feels good, you still got to rest it up a little bit. So that.
How do you feel you played over these first couple of weeks? Just getting back into things.
I felt pretty all right. Felt pretty rusty the first game. Didn't get a lot of practice before that, so I definitely felt a bit rusty, technique wise. But this previous game, I definitely felt better. I felt a bit, did some improvements. I mean, there's a lot to improve upon, but I didn't think I did too bad.
I mean, it feels like, you know, talking to the coaches, I know they don't always say something definitive, but it feels like you being able to lock down that right tackle spot would really start to open things up for the line where they could have Adam at center. And do you feel like that's kind of the plan moving forward, where that you being able to play there at right tackle would help a lot?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think, I mean, you know, I'm just trying to get out there and just try to help the O-line as best as I can. And I think that if I'm in there, you know, that's another body that can have in the rotation. I think, like I said, we have a lot of good players on the O-line. So just having that depth on the O-line, I think, definitely helps. And I'm just happy to be out there, happy to be able to, you know, help the best I can.
So, Adam, you spent some time around Victor. And again, he comes in as a freshman in 2019, and he was an early enrollee. So he's had, you know, spring ball in 2019. He's had the chance to really practice. And again, he had to overcome, you know, nagging knee injury. Now he can play. What are your impressions of what he's done now so far and just like building up to this point?
Well, it's great to see. I mean, that he's out there and he's being productive and he's helping the team, you know, because he's obviously, he's a monstrous man. Like, he should be in the WWE. if football doesn't work out, he can easily go and be in the WWE and be like the, you know, Big Vic, some, whatever the heck his name would be.
Big Vic.
It's an easy access to, you know, an opportunity to do something professional. Football doesn't work out in the long run, but he's a phenomenal kid, man. Funny. But like I said, he's had the opportunity to practice a lot of football, mm-hmm. and not have to go in and play.
Mm-hmm.
And now he has the chance to, you know, go in and play, and, you know, he's doing a pretty good job. And that's what I like most about him and what I'm seeing so far. You know, he hasn't played a lot of football. His number is called. He's ready. You know, he's locked in. And he's doing, I'm not saying he's perfect, and, you know, we're not watching tape like you mentioned fully like the coaches are, but it's good to see somebody who, when their number is called and the opportunity is there, they attack it and they're productive and, you know, doing positive things for the team.
All right. So again, Temple faces Navy Saturday at 3:30 p.m. down in Annapolis. We've got several mailbag questions here to close things out. First one comes from Twitter. All these come from Twitter. Jason Zerbe. Jason's a Pirates fan, and lo and behold, he is asking you, as a Pittsburgh guy, ADM, when will the Pirates make it to the World Series?
Oh, man.
What's next, Haley's comment?
Yeah, it's interesting to see, man. I don't know if I'll be alive when that happens and they win the World Series. But if they make it,
mm-hmm.
it'll be interesting to see, because, like, we have some pretty good talent, I think, in the minors. You know, we obviously draft.
They always do. They always do. Draft,
you know, like I said, all the dudes that are starting, you know what I mean? Musgrove was just pitching, Garrett Cole, mm-hmm. Tyon, who the heck's the other one that was just on the bump? You know,
Josh Bell.
Josh Bell. Rodriguez was just pitching for the Cardinals in the playoffs, was the mm-hmm. the number one. I mean, you can go on and on, but, you know, we have, you know, Brian Reynolds, who still could be a trade piece. Mm-hmm. O'Neill Cruz is a freakish. He's like Big Vic of baseball. He's 6'7",
right?
Yeah, he's ridiculous. Yeah. You know, we have three rookies this year that hit over 16 home runs and played a lot of baseball.
A lot of baseball.
Cabrian Hayes is like a legit Gold Glove third baseman, but pitching will be a big deal for us. And, you know, obviously we've done a good job with pitchers. Once they leave Pittsburgh, they go and become, you know what I mean, $100 million heirs, or whatever you want to call them. Dudes are just mm-hmm. making a ton of money and pitching in the playoffs. It'll be a little while, but everybody in Pittsburgh wants them to sell the team. They keep thinking Mark Cuban's going to buy the team. I'd love to have Mark Cuban buy the team.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? But, you know, he's been a Pittsburgh guy. But I think that, you know, you still have to spend at least a little bit. You know, you're seeing the Royals, and then Baltimore played at a high level this year. Mm-hmm. The Rays have won championships. Teams that don't spend a lot of money have still won championships. And obviously they start selling some players off. So it's going to be a while. I'm hoping that we make the playoffs, not this year. And I guess that'd be 2024. A wild card berth for the Pirates.
Mm-hmm. The next question here, also, these are all from Twitter, from Kenzo Drew, at Dr. Drew is the Twitter handle. His question: with the year he's having, do you see Leighton Jordan returning next season, or is he for sure gone?
Oh, I you know, Leighton kind of reminds me to an extent of like a little bit of Hassan, mm-hmm. obviously Hassan Reddick, who's with the Eagles now. Both have freakishly athletic skills. Both at the time were still growing into their position, have been moved around a little bit to linebacker, pass rusher, you know, played offense in high school. You know, we were both undersized. You know what I mean? Never really gained the weight until Like if you see Hassan now, obviously he's eating right. You know what I'm saying? Like Mato's not that level yet where he's able to do what he wants to do. You know, when it comes to the nutrition, and he's still doing enough. I mean, in college, give you enough. But one thing that you know they are able to do is they can rush the passer and they find ways to impact game. I think as you look at you know AK, right? It was with us for a while and then went to Penn State. Now he's one of the most productive pass rushers for the Falcons. And he was the same way. All those three dudes are kind of, you know, they have long arms, just freakishly athletic, but you can't hide the production. And that's what Lato has been given Temple. It's a long ways away, but I think we'll see what the NFL grade gives him. Whether it's, I guess, you know, obviously you turn your name in, John, you know, some of the guys might not know listeners and they come back and say, hey, listen, Leighton Jordan, you're going to be a fourth rounder. And then Ned Leighton has to go ahead and say, hey, listen, I got to make a decision, blah, 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 him and sit down with coach and make a decision, see what's best for them. So that happens every year with guys like this to see who's going to, you know, possibly leave early, who's going to go to the league, however that case may be. So hopefully you know, he continues to be productive and, you know, that thing falls into place for him the way he wants it to.
Yeah, and he's got 6.5 sacks tied for the team lead with Darian Varner. So he's going to be graduating too, so he's going to have his degree. So I think he might, in my humble opinion, I think he might be hard for Temple to keep. You know, if he becomes like you said, if
I don't want to say the word loyal because loyal in this game is just different.
Yeah.
But he understands, and again, the staff that recruited him is not there any longer either. Mm-hmm. So it's like, do I make a decision and do I want to go close? You know, there's gonna be some suitors for certain. You know what I'm saying? Like there's gonna be some suitors. I just was trying not to jinx it and have, you know, me say anything like that, but there'll be some suitors like you mentioned, John.
Yeah. The next question here is from Declan Landis. He's one of our students at Temple, works at the student radio station WHIP. He's also in my sports writing class in my other life as a Temple media advisor and as a teacher. So
how many things does he do? You just named like 7 different things: a teacher, a sports advisor, a writer,
yep,
a babysitter. This guy, I need him. Have you ever met him before?
What's that?
Did I ever meet Declan?
No. I'm saying like, so Declan's a student here at Temple. He's our assistant sports director at the student radio station, WHIP. So he covers the team and he takes my sports writing class at Temple. So
okay, nice. Pretty well.
I was teasing him and saying, I saw you lurking around with a like on the mailbag question. Says you got to ask one. He said, I'd be happy to. I've been told I don't know a lot about Temple football. He's joking around. So that's in your opinion, which incoming recruit should I be most excited for? So Temple's got 17 verbals. I tell students all the time when you're covering recruiting, it drives the most page views for us because it's the what's next part of sports, you know? And I don't know, Declan, I could tell you, I mean, there's another question about this later in the mailbag. I mean, they're definitely recruiting to what their perceived needs would be. They got some offensive linemen in this group. I mean, I don't know, EJ Warner's been up and down. I think we've seen signs of a promise, but they've got a pretty good looking quarterback in this class, Tyler Douglas at Ocean Township. He works out with Kenny Pickett. They're trained by the same guy. He's a guy to keep an eye on. And then I would say maybe like these backs like Jaquez Smith down in Florida and then Kyle Williams at Harrisburg High School. I mean, they need running backs, you know, with all due respect to Ed Sadie, Darvon Hubbard, Trey Blair. They need some skill and depth at that position. I think Jaquez Smith is a guy that can break some tackles. I think Kyle Williams might be a little bit faster than him, maybe kind of like an all-purpose back type of guy, but they both look good on, you know, I haven't scouted these guys like the coaches have, but those are a couple of guys to keep an eye on there, Declan. And we got a question in here about one that you got on Twitter about like a pass that you wish you could have back.
This is from Temple Fan Owl on Twitter. Adam could have one pass attempt back, basically a redo from his collegiate career, what pass attempt would it be? Yeah, we just talked about it earlier. It's funny that it's Navy week. 2008, obviously we had a 5-7 win season. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm in the missing, I think, 4 games with a separated shoulder.
Yeah.
We lost in the Hail Mary to Buffalo. We lost to Navy 28. We were up 28-3, and we went for it. It was an overtime after they scored that touchdown that we just talked about with the fumble. And we were up. I know it was tied. We had the ball first, and it was 4th-and-2 or something from the 2-yard line, I believe it was. And we ran like a stick nod. Like if you play Madden, you run the nod route. Like the tight end goes up 5 yards, turns around, little jab step, and goes up. So I had Maneri on the nod route, and free blitzer came. gave a little pump, and he, you know, threw it. And to this day, like, I've probably seen Steve maybe 2 years ago, 3 years ago, and he's like, we still talk about this play. He knows I'm still disappointed and angry, and he's a phenomenal dude. I just looked at my Instagram before this, and he has a picture with him next to Derek Jeter. So I don't know what he's doing with Derek Jeter, but, you know, Steve's
he's doing commercial real estate up there or something like that.
Yeah, he's obviously, I know he does a lot of stuff with, like, I don't want to say underprivileged kids
or yeah.
things of that nature. You know, him and John Palumbo,
yep.
another former player. But Steve, obviously an NFL guy, but he ended up dropping the pass, gave it off his hands, and they came and scored, you know what I mean, on the next play, and we ended up losing. But that's probably the one I wish I could have back. And, you know, for me and Steve, you know, if you're listening, Steve, I'd probably be in the NFL right now still if you would have caught that ball. So I'm just going to blame you. But now I love Steve. Again, a guy that just self-made. I mean, obviously comes in at a tight end, super yeah. skinny and thin, and then, you know, builds himself up and plays tackle in the NFL. I mean, are you kidding me? Like, that's amazing. Yeah. Similar to, like, Cody Booth mold, and just seeing someone do that and go through that transformation, then slim back down, boy, looks good right now. So that's the one pass I'd have back. So, Steve, buddy, keep doing good things, man, and making an impact.
Steve's awesome. He's a great dude. Great family, too. Do you remember when he was with the Chiefs playing O-line and Troy Polamalu had a concussion, or he got dinged up with his helmet hitting his
helmet? Yeah. I remember, like, I mean, it's just amazing how big he was. Like, we was the Patriots. I'm like, there's no way you could be this big. You're like 330 pounds. How? Mm-hmm. How do you do that? But them dudes from Jersey are just different animals. And old Maneri, man. It's cool to see, though. That's definitely the one I wish we could have back, because we would have won 6 games, would have went to a bowl game for the first time in 700 years. And our team would have been recognized, not the team after ours, with my buddy Chester and Vaughn Charlton and those guys. So,
well, just, like we've said a million times, you guys know that you really laid the foundation for a lot of what happened. So we did a lot of the heavy lifting. The last question here. This is another recruiting question from Larry Atreba. Larry, I hope I'm pronouncing your last name correctly. Question, gents, with 17 verbal commitments to Temple football for 2023 and the early signing period rapidly approaching, are Stan Drayton and his staff recruiting to meet the needs of the program? And what is the likelihood that these recruits will actually sign? I know your favorite word, JDC, is fluid. Adam, I have to tell people on our message boards all the time, like, yeah, you know, like, these things are fluid, and people want to know, like, is this kid going to stay committed? And again, you know better than I do. I've never had to sweat it out. Like, the night before signing day, we're trying to get our coverage in order and thinking, like, okay, we got to stay on top of any late changing things. Whereas you guys are sweating it right down to the last minute when they're, you know, are we going to get this kid's NLI? But yeah, I think, Larry, I think they're definitely recruiting to the needs of the program. I mean, like, again, I think I've probably said this in past podcasts on this one or Al Scoop podcast, like, and Adam, you've been interviewed before as a coach. Like, you have to walk a fine line when you're talking to the media, like, whether you were coaching the quarterbacks, whether you're coaching the receivers, hey, what does your receiver room look like? You get a good sense early on, like, okay, we're rebuilding. These are the guys that look like they belong. These are guys that may not be with us next year. And I'm sure Stan and his staff, seven games in this season, they've got a good idea of what they need. I mean, they need offensive linemen. So they've got, you know, they've got Eric King, they've got Luke Watson, they've got Cole Skinner, they've got Kevin Terry
down. They've got the transfer portal coming up soon.
Yeah, and I do think that they are recruiting to those needs. I think that they know they need to add speed and size to that receiver room. They're bringing in a bigger wideout in Nathan Stewart. Richard Dandridge, a kid that down at was playing for Phillip Simpson down at Homestead High School down in Miami. And he was getting some additional looks. They got a kid in Preston Everhart from the Hunt School. It looks like a John Christopher type of Ryan Alderman slot guy. You know, yeah, I think that they know what their needs are. They just added a verbal and Zaire Coleman Frazier from Timber Creek, a kid that had been committed to Monmouth. And so the fans say, oh, why are you flipping kids from Monmouth? But he just kept having a better and better and better senior season. And
they've seen him live. They had to have seen him live.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Cool. I mean, not whether it was last week or they said, hey, we're going to go to this game. Okay, the best player on the field is this guy right here, is Zaim. And okay, like, he's a different type of cat. We got to take him. And then boom, that's how it goes. It's like, you have to see these guys live, John. You know what I mean? And that's a big deal for for staffs, especially new staffs. Because you, like you said, I mean, it's always interesting, John, like, especially kids in Florida. Like, I just saw a kid decommit from Pitt, and obviously whatever the main reasons may be, whatever the case is, but they're scary. You know what I mean? That we usually get a ton of talent out of Florida, whether they're getting back in there or not. But things happen, and next thing you know, as soon as a Power Five team offers, things get dicey. You reach out to the kid, doesn't text back. You hit the coach up, doesn't text back. And that's when you start to get that little panic. You got to go knock on Coach Drayton's door and like, hey, listen, I think we're going to have an issue with so-and-so. And it's scary. You know what I mean? That's the tough part. Yeah. You hope that the relationships are good enough, but relationships can only go so far. You know, kids are motivated by different things nowadays. Like, hey, I'm a receiver. Okay. Pitt doesn't throw the football a ton. And Temple doesn't throw the football a ton anymore with this new offense. I'm going to go down there at UCF and throw the ball for 60 times. Whatever the case may be, using different examples of schools. But you always got to be on your toes, and you have to recruit to the very end, and you have to ask tough questions. I remember Weez was always great at that. Like, AD, what's up with this guy in Florida? Like I need to know, like, is he good? Like, let me talk to his family. Get him on the line now. Let's talk. Like, every single day he's asking tough questions. Who's else is calling you? Who's recruiting you? Are you locked in? Like, it might get a little tiresome to the player, but it's like, we need to know, because this early signing period is a different animal now. So
yeah. Did you like it? I guess you could go either way on this. Do you like the early signing day? Or was it better to just wait?
Yeah, I think it's good for teams like us.
Yeah.
Temple. You know what I mean? So kids can't have too much time to wait until February. You know what I mean? It's like, hey, listen, you get a good guy kind of under the radar a tad bit. I can't, you know, another team can't come and snatch up before February when, instance, like Maryland loses a wide receiver to Michigan, and this kid in Maryland from Maryland, hey, he's their backup plan, and the backup plan is better than Temple. Okay, I'm going to go to Maryland now. So those things have happened in our past. Now you have this, and these kids have to be kind of locked in now, or you just don't sign. You know what I mean? You're hoping that your entire class does this early signing period, but who knows? There might be someone that doesn't.
We probably talked about this before, just to close things out, just to add to Larry's question here. Do you have a favorite recruiting story that stands out? Like a favorite recruitment of a player, whether it was just the way you clicked with his family or the way you saw a kid really develop like a diamond in the rough type, anything like
that. I know he hasn't played a ton, but he's a kid that works his tail off. Like Quasi Evans has always been a favorite of mine. I know you know that. But his parents were just phenomenal. Like, and we haven't talked in a while. I talked to Quasi, though. You know, I haven't talked, but his parents used to just text me all the time. I mean, me and Stan Hickson went down to his house in Maryland, and, you know, they ordered Pizza Hut pizza, and we're just crashed, like, you know, in their living room. And Quasi comes from a tough spot in Baltimore, too. You know what I mean? The kid's, like a really tough spot. And you can just see how hungry he is, whether it's going to be in football, whether it's going to be outside of it. The kid's going to be successful in life, but, you know, just sitting in his living room, just realizing, you just see, that's the coolest thing about being a coach, is just seeing those different types of kids and where, like, I've sat in mansions, you know what I mean? I've sat in gigantic houses, and I've sat in houses that have, you know, two rooms, you know what I mean? That are in a different area. And it's just crazy how far and how much football brings people together from different walks of life. And I think, you know, that's the coolest thing about football and seeing stuff, you know, like Quasi, who's, again, going to be successful, whether it's this year or next year or outside of football, just seeing where he comes from and the people that, you know, he had his little brother, sister singing. She was like doing opera. And I'm like, what is going on? Where am I right now? And the little brother's over there just talking trash, and his parents are just clowning everybody. And it just felt like, you know, they kind of made me part of their family. And then I'm glad you asked that, because I want to shoot his dad a text now. And because he always checks in, he calls me. Like Dan Marino, or every time I text him, he would name another quarterback that I passed up in the record books in Pittsburgh. I'm like, dude, like, I mean, I'm not as good as Dan Marino, but I did break his record.
Yep.
But he's one of them. But there's a ton of them. If I go back and think, like, I loved recruiting, like Broderick Yancey back in the day, and like, you know, Ventel was always cool. And like Keith Kirkwood, just getting him from Hawaii, and just like an E1 email came, and it's like, boom, you know what I mean, like. You know, seeing their parents were super cool. So,
Good stuff, Adam. Well, thank you all for the mailbag questions. Thank you to our listeners for joining us once again for another episode of the Believe in Temple Football Podcast. We'll be back next week, talk about this Navy game, talk about USF, and anything else that you guys want to put on the agenda with your mailbag questions. So, thanks again. We'll talk to you soon.
See you guys.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.